Hey, it's episode 432 of the 343 podcast. I hope everybody's having a great time with the World Cup. Obviously, if you're a U.S. men's national team fan, you're jumping for joy at this point. We should all kind of take it in stride. You shouldn't get too high on the highs and too low on the lows, even keeled, but there's something to be optimistic and excited about. Today, I have John Kokoris on the line, a longtime colleague out of the East Coast, a longtime friend and partner as well. He has a unique experience to share with everybody here, which not many coaches get to experience, and that is being able to coach the same group of players or the same team for their entire youth trajectories. And look, there's always some churn rate, right? Players come, players go, but you basically have the core of the group for years and years and years. So there's a lot of insight here. I hope you enjoy this one. Here we go. Speaking of coaching a team for many, many years, even if you just coach them for one season, you guys have to go to 343coaching.com and pick up the 343 methodology, which has proven to be a remarkable winning and development formula for not just the players and not just the team, but for you as the coach. Yes, there have been thousands of coaches who have gone through this program. There are hundreds of testimonials that I've received over the years of how coaches have gone from the lowest of levels to the highest of levels, from just starting out part-time to transforming themselves into full-time coaches. And even the part-time coaches, let's say that you have a full-time job that is the bread and butter that feeds your family, and you're just coaching on the side because you love it, or maybe you have kids. This methodology has made a remarkable change in their enjoyment of actually doing the training, of actually coaching the kids, and of actually being successful on the field. So again, I repeat, go to 343coaching.com. There are both free and premium programs for you there. And parents, nobody is more influential than you guys when it comes to the development of your child. Yes, coaches have them for a handful of hours every week, but you have them for the rest of the time. Forget school, forget these other things. You know what I mean. So it's a huge burden on you. I get it, but I'm sure you embrace it with open arms and you want to do the best possible job that you can. For you guys, we have codified our decades worth of soccer experience here in the United States in the American soccer landscape. We've seen countless cycles from U9 up to and including professional soccer players. We've seen the entire pipeline. We've learned a tremendous amount of lessons, and we've codified it all for you at 343masterclass.com. What is the point? The point is to elevate your level of discernment so that you can help your kid better navigate the landscape and to improve themselves technically, tactically, culturally, mentally. The only thing that's maybe missing is the physical component. I'll leave that up to the physical professionals, okay? But when it comes to technique, when it comes to tactics, when it comes to culture and mentality, this program is for you, 343masterclass.com. And last but certainly not least, which is the program that John Kokoris here partnered with us, is the 7 versus 7 program. So coaches, if you are coaching in the 7 versus 7 environment, you go to 7v7coaching.com. All right, everybody, I hope you enjoy this one. Here we go. Let me frame this up for everybody. John, of course, you have been with us for a very long time, partners, obviously, in the 7v7 course. And among other things, I consider you a colleague and a friend, even at a distance. We haven't met in person, but it doesn't feel that way, though, right? If I can say that. So I think it's important for people to hear your story for a whole host of reasons, but in particular, parents and coaches would be interested in the journey because it sounds like you completed a full cycle now, right? With a particular group of players, which is really interesting when a coach has the privilege and capability of going through an entire cycle with a group of players, be it from the age of 10 or 11 or 12 or even younger than that, and see them graduate and move on away from youth soccer. You get to see the highs, the lows, the development, right? Quote unquote development or lack thereof. Because most coaches, what do they get? They get a season or two, maybe three seasons with a team, and then something happens. Either the team disbands or the coach moves on or the club rotates coaches. And it's my opinion. Here's where we can start off, John. It's my opinion that it's harder for a coach to get a really good feel for what quote unquote development really is and what it really looks like unless you see the entire trajectory. Your opinion.
Absolutely. Well, first thing is, I think we even talked about it. I don't know if it was recorded or not. I think it was recorded, but when I came across 343, you know, I remember a lot of the things that Brian was doing with that group. I remember, I'm like, yeah, I can see the same thing happening with these boys. Because when I first came on the podcast the first time, episode, I think 157, it was like 2019. And I already had the kids for like 3-4 years because they were U10. And I had this as like U6. And I'm like, all right, I don't see myself stopping now. And I saw a program blossoming up from beneath that age group. And we were just repeating the formula that we had success with. And then I remember being like, oh man, like I was watching Brian in the national finals, I think like 2 years in a row with the Galaxy. And I remember thinking like, man, like if I could hold these kids till high school, like a lot of cool things are going to happen. I thought like, so it was kind of, I almost wanted to emulate what he was doing with those boys. And now, yeah, it happened. And you hit the nail on the head. When you have that trajectory and you have that development, the experience to see those boys go through every stage, the seeds grow, right? And you see what the work that you put in like 3 years ago starting to come out. And sometimes it's like you pack the players with information, or, you know, you beat them in the head with like certain activities again and again and again and again and again, and you trust the process. And then things click when they hit a little bit of puberty, and then boom, there it is. You see it like 3 years later and you're like, wow, that, thank God I was consistent. Thank God, you know, we believed in what we were doing. And then, you know, even Brian, like, thank God I saw Brian early enough to do that. And I'm like, all right, if this guy's doing it for so long, I hope to get those kind of results, you know? So it was really, really incredible journey so far. I mean, the boys are in 10th grade. They're finishing up 10th grade. So I got 2 more years with them. But yeah, you hit the nail on the head, man.
Cool. So I'm going to just start plucking on the strings that I'm interested in. And then you can answer it, not answer it, and then go on tangents if you want. And it's just going to stimulate, well, it's going to stimulate more thoughts and questions from my end that I think, not just for my curiosity, but for the audience's benefit. So two thoughts came up. One is the competition format. So you said you got these players when they were like 6 years old, like super young at that age. What? Yeah. Because things have changed since then, obviously, with, you know, it used to be 11v11, used to start at U11 when Brian was doing that particular famous team. And that's obviously changed. So what was the competition format for you from the very beginning up until now? And what were the transitions, right? So at U7 or U6, what was it? Was it 4v4, 6v6? What was it?
It was 6v6. So they played a goalie, and I remember playing like a 2-1-2. I remember that like very clearly. And that was the year that they changed it. They went to 7v7 the next year. So when they got on age at U, it was really U8. At U8, I remember that's when we went to 7v7. And then they had the 9v9 format for U11, U12, and then 11v11 at U13. So they created the standard format that we use today the year that the boys went on age, coincidentally. So they kind of, it was just perfect timing.
Did you also have issues with, or did it impact you with the, you know, they went to birth year and then they went to the school year and then back to birth year. I think they flip-flopped like twice in the past 8 years. Was that something that your club or this group was affected by?
It was the same exact thing. I think they did the format and the birth year. I think they did that like the same exact time. And I remember the 08s were U9, and they're graduating high school now. So if the 08s were U9, my boys were U7 when they did that. So they were unaffected. We had a little gang of like 5-6 kids. And it wasn't the players so much. It was the families. We saw like the respect the families had for the coaching staff and the respect the families had for the players. They weren't on top of them. They were just chilling on the side, getting to know each other, listening to like, you know, their AirPods. They're now like on the sideline looking like they let us work, and the kids didn't go to the parents when they got water breaks. The kids went to themselves in the corner. And I was like, oh, we could work with this. Like, you know, like there's something here. And then when you talked about the format and also the birth year, one of the first meetings I had with the team when they turned, I think, U9, it was right before COVID, actually. So it might have been U10. I told the families, I printed out all the leagues and the pathways and the pyramid and all that, and I handed it out to everybody in the building. And I remember saying to them, I'm like, hey, this is the way the leagues work now. The DA was there, NPL was there, all the leagues were there. And I said, by the time these kids get to high school, you're going to shred this paper up. These leagues won't exist. I told them that. And today we laugh about it because I was right. There, nothing exists except one of the regional leagues, the EDP. Everything else got shredded up and down. It was not Long Island Junior and EDP, which is like the kind of, the you know, it's the regional local leagues around us, but nothing above that. Everything else changed. So the parents saw that and they laugh now at the younger parents who are getting, you know, their heads turned by league names. We have one ourselves now. And my older parents, they laugh. They're like, you know, it's how long is this one going to last? You know,
maybe I missed it, John. Was the team not split up as a consequence of the federation or whatever saying we're going to birth year?
No, they were all 2010 naturally. They're all 2010. Yeah. So we had one boy that actually played up on the 2009s. So he was up and then he came, we found out he was eligible for 2010 or whatever. And he came back into the 2010s. Early or whatever, but he was a 2010. I was like, oh, come down and play with us. Yeah.
Got you. I'm going to contextualize my next question with, you know, because you brought up Brian and that group that he had all the way through until they graduated from youth. There was some churn rate for sure, right? Some turnover. Players come, players go. There's different reasons as to why they come and why they go. You know, obviously, if they come to the team, it's because we think that they're very good and we want to add them and they want to come and join. And then when players go, it's usually one of two reasons. You know, either they see greener pastures elsewhere, you know, maybe more playing time elsewhere, or whatever the case may be. Maybe somebody schmoozed them a little bit and they're like, hey, you know, you should come over here. We'll treat you this way and that way. And they go, or, you know, we sometimes have to let players go, for whatever reason also. And usually it's because, again, of playing time. And we think that it's better for the player to go and get ample playing time somewhere else. So my question to you, John, with all that preface is, what was the churn rate like over the course of these, what is it, 8 years now or something that you had the same group?
Yeah, 8 years. So from the main core, I think we started with six. Well, we started with 10, obviously, but the guys that were with me from the very, very, very beginning, we only lost one. And actually, he just started training with us again this month. So he went away at 11, at U13, and now he's trying to come back in, which is cool. He went to just the local side and now he's trying to come in back, which I love the kid to death. So I was very happy to see him. But other than that, our attention's been very, very strong. We lost one player abroad. He moved abroad. He's playing in Spain at one of a top club there, which is obviously kind of, that's great. That's not a negative loss. Very positive. And then during COVID, we lost two boys. We lost both to NYCFC. We lost a goalkeeper, which I thought was the right decision because of the goalkeeping resources that he would have got, which we couldn't offer at the time. We were very, very, very small. Like the kids were like 9, 10. The businesses were just going as far as like resources and financials and stuff. So we just started. I could not provide what he would have got there. And he's doing very well. He's still there. And then the other boy is in Spain now. He went to NYCFC for a couple of years and then he went to Spain as well. It's a different boy. We had two guys go to Spain and one to Portugal. So he left also during the COVID period, which a lot of things were in the air, obviously, at that point. Other than that, anytime we lost a player, we tried to keep him in the program. He went down into another team within the program for more playing time because our rosters, we keep open and fluid. So we don't have to cut them from the program. We just say, hey, look, you're not getting enough minutes here. You deserve your minutes. You're here at practice. We're going to put you into the second team. You're going to play. And it also went the other way. From my team, we have our goalkeeper. Our starting goalkeeper came from our seventh team in the academy. So we have, you know, if you rank them 1 through 7, he came from the seventh team. And now he starts on the first team. And we have 2 or 3 guys that came from the third team and a handful of guys that came from the second team. And they were promoted. So a lot of the stuff we do was internal. And what I've realized over time, Gary, is that a lot of families didn't come to us I think, and now I'm starting to realize, is because they felt like since the team was the same year after year and we didn't have turnover, a lot of people thought that like I wasn't interested in bringing players in. And I know that because when they came to me, they're like, oh, I thought this is like a, you only scout, you invite, you don't, you can't call, like you're unapproachable. I can't come to you and ask you for a tryout. You would reject my son. And now they're finding out that like, oh, I didn't know it was like that. I'm like, yeah, man, come down and play, you know, see what's up, see if you like it. And now players are coming and, you know, yeah, we're happy to see people come. So there is a little bit of a churn rate. I think there's more of a promotion rate. I think that the team changes more from players getting promoted and yeah, and players do move on, but we don't lose too many from the lack of like the level, like kids aren't just dropping off because of the level.
A lot of curiosities here. You said seventh team and third team. Maybe I'm misinterpreting or maybe I'm not. What the hell is going on there? Like you have seven different teams for the same age group.
Yeah. So Johan Juniors was its own organization up until COVID. And then we joined East Coast, which is now East Coast Surfs during COVID. And they already had three teams 2010. And we had brought over four. So we had seven teams in the age group into 99, which was obviously massive. It's not normal. Usually there's four. So we had seven. Yeah. And the goalkeeper, well, look, they were 11 years old and I'm walking by and I'm like, hey, I'm like the OH train at 8 o'clock. And he's like, I'm a 2010. And I said, what do you mean you're a 2010? Where are your parents? And he introduced me to his parents and the kid was almost 6 feet tall at that age. You know, he definitely was not at the level. But I brought him down and he's been working hard ever since. So yeah, he came from the seventh team. You heard it right.
How many teams total, man? If there's that many teams per age group kind, or I'm sure every age group doesn't have seven teams, but it sounds like an insanely large organization in your area.
We have 1,100 players. I think that we have about 60 teams, 55, 60 teams. Yeah. I strictly do the boys. I don't oversee the two sides, so I know we have in the boys. But, yeah, we try to do four teams on 7v7. We try to do four teams 9v9. And then we try to do three teams for 11v11. And I think that's a good model for player depth and retention. And when you move to the next format, right, from 7v7 to 9v9, if you have four teams, you can kind of grab from the second team and the third team and create, you know, the roster depth that you need. And then you figure, hey, when they're going 11v11, the top, you know, the top team and a handful of the second team are going to create your 11v11 first team, plus a couple additions from tryouts or whatever. And then the same thing happens. You figure your whole second team or the rest of your second team with the majority of your third team, plus maybe one or two selections from tryouts, create your second team and so on and so forth. So we try to do everything in-house. We really don't scout. We don't try to. I mean, we don't have players in the coaches on the field calling players and shoulder tapping parents. Very, very rare.
Is that also though? Because John, ever since you joined Surf, when did you join Surf? Maybe a year or two ago, 2 years ago, 1 year.
Yeah, well, this is our first year wearing Surf uniforms. So once
you join like a mega club like that, obviously, and it's that big in your region, you kind of become dominant and your footprint on the geography itself is large enough such that players just come to you naturally. You don't have to go out there scouting as much or recruiting. And maybe it is like a club policy or team policy or your policy and not to do it. Or maybe you guys just don't have time to do it. Or maybe you guys aren't even incentivized to do it. But when you're a mega club, I would presume that it's less necessary.
We're getting kids from like, you know, for those that know the area, we're getting kids from like Westchester, like randomly saying, hey, I want to play for Surf, which is, you have to cross a bridge and then drive an hour to get to our field from that. So figure like 90 minutes in traffic, maybe an hour, 90 minutes. So, you know, in New York and that traffic going through Queens is not fun. But then I'm like turning them down. I'm like, you're 10 years old. You're not coming here. Like, stop. Like there's places in Westchester that you can train that are really good. You know, and sometimes they just hear Surf and they want to just train. They don't even know where we are. And I tell them, hey, we're in Garden City in Nassau County. And then they realize, oh yeah, that is too far, you know? So that happens for sure.
But that's mainly the reason, right? Right. You're not going out to the fields to scout and find players because like, you don't need to do that.
We don't, well, it's not that we don't, we definitely should be doing that. The thing is we don't do it because what I've learned is that easy come, easy go. And if I show the type of player and convince him to come to me, that means that someone could go and schmooze him, like you said, and bring him out from us to somewhere else. And what we realized is our player retention is high because people see us, they like us, and then they come to us. And then it's kind of hard to like schmooze them at that point because like they sold themselves, you know, like they did their research. They like our program and they put that kind of sweat into it to like find out about us. They took their time. So I don't know. It works. It's a formula that works. We don't ever scout anybody.
Good, man. Good. If you don't mind me probing, and you can keep it as general as you want. You said that a couple of players, they ended up moving overseas. What age did that happen? If you can share what clubs those were and maybe even how it came about.
Yeah, I'll talk about the two that that were kind of through our program. One left, you know, after he went to NYCFC, so it's not my business. He's doing very well. And I very fond of the player and the family, but I talk about the ones that were with me. So we did have Kef, someone that you know very well. We had a couple of groups of players train with Kef in Europe, you know, 2-3 times a year they were first year 11v11, 13, 14, 15. So as they went through the 11v11 stages, we started to get them international experience. And it wasn't so much about trying to do something like pro. It was like, hey, mom and dad aren't here. Go check out what it's like to kind of stay over here for a month, you know, without, you know, in a foreign country, a different language, you know, you're going to get homesick. We want to make you uncomfortable. So we did that with those age groups, 2010s and 2011 boys. And we had
went on a travel trip. What do you mean? What was done?
Well, we connected with a guy that we trust, and he brought over groups of 5 and 6 boys, 5, 6, 7 boys at a time. And what they did was they dormed in a hub in Portugal or Spain or Holland or Denmark, and then they would train with academies. And if they were good enough, instead of doing like drop-in sessions, meaning like different kids trying out for groups, they would be asked to train with the actual academy. And then after they did like a couple stints of that, meaning a month trip, a 2-week trip, another month trip, a 90-day trip, after they did that for, you know, 3-4 trips, some boys got invited, some boys they found their own way, meaning like through their own resources, and they made contacts with clubs once they had some data on them. And luckily, one boy's family was moving to Spain, like extended family, the people, his guardians were moving to Spain. So he tried out with a program there, Celta Vigo, a huge program. And then through kind of the networks over there, he landed in a very nice club where a player that started for PSG this year was there at the club that he's at now 3 or 4 years ago. So, so he landed there.
What club?
Balmenor.
Okay.
It's in Galicia. It's in Spain. It's on the West Coast. So it's just outside of Vigo. The boy's excelling in school. The boy's excelling on the soccer field. He's excellent. Mentally, he's on another level. I haven't seen a player like that as far as maturity. And like, if you have a conversation with him, it feels like you're talking to a 40-year-old man. He's been like that since he's a kid.
How old is he?
He's 15.
Got it.
Yeah. So
he has a Spanish passport.
Yeah. His family kind of moved back there. That's kind of what happened. So it was not a soccer thing. It was.
No. Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm asking because these are all the natural questions that parents in our audience are going to be asking. Oh, whoa. I thought you you couldn't go, or how did you do it? You know, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. If you can go over there for non-soccer reasons and you have a European passport or something of that nature, okay, then you're good to go. But a lot, I just know, cause I get hit up all the time of, hey, can you help my kid go over there? Something go, okay, what's your citizenship? Do you have any bloodline from Spain or Holland or Italy? No. Okay, well, then you're kind of screwed. I'm sorry.
Exactly. And then obviously, you know, with the laws and stuff like that, that's not for me to get into. But it can't obviously be soccer first, you know?
Yeah.
It's a lifestyle thing and the families move there. And then, yeah, if you're good
for
enough.
For sure. So that kid came from your original group?
Yeah, he's been with me since literally diapers, 4 years old.
Awesome. Yeah. So let's continue down that trajectory. So, okay, you went through 6v6, 7v7, 9v9, 11v11. Now you say that they're in high school, right? And they're sophomores, you said?
Yeah, they're sophomores.
So you still have them potentially for two more years. Mm-hmm. I know that the club got accepted it to ECNL, right? Or ECRL or something of that nature. Is that where this team is currently competing in?
Yeah, so what happened was the team is the flagship team of the club. So I joined East Coast in 2020 with my staff. We took the boys' side. You know, we started with the local league, EDP. Then if you do well in EDP, you go to the National League. The boys did well there. They won the state championship, the regional championship. They went to the national championships. They did not win national championships at USYS. We fell short twice at the Nationals. And then we got invited to ECNL RL, which was a standalone version of ECNL. So there's ECNL as a first team thing, which, you know, everybody tries to get into. And then below that is the RL. They had a standalone league called North Atlantic RL. So that was what we were in. It was only first teams allowed. There's no second teams in there. So we're in that. It was a very, very competitive division at the top level. Some clubs at that age group weren't that good, but you know, the top two or three teams were really good. We won the division. We went to the national champion. We went to the playoffs. We did well. We went to the national championships and we won that. So we won the national championships for the RL, and our 2012s went to the national championships, but they lost in the final. So on that journey, the ECNL decided that we had enough results to promote our club to the full ECNL platform. This is our first year in ECNL, and both the we have, you know, a couple of our teams are obviously going to playoffs in San Diego, which is what we said in the beginning. So our 2010s are going to be going there. Our 2011s, I think, will be going as well, and a couple of teams will be going to the RL playoffs as well.
This is after you joined with Surf.
Yeah, this is. Yeah, no, we got the invitation before joining Surf. So 1 year ago, we got the invitation to join ECNL. We merged with Surf over the summer, I think. It was like right around now, like literally 12 months ago.
Got it. Share whatever it is that you feel comfortable sharing. I'm curious. The audience, I'm sure, is curious. You know, what was the decision-making process surrounding joining Surf, joining a mega club like that? Because, you know, every small, medium-sized, even some large-sized clubs eventually come across this bridge, right? Or this crossroad of, hey, do I remain who we are now, right? Independent or our own thing? Or do we strike a partnership? Or do we straight up merge with somebody? I'm sure that's been thought through, and it wasn't on a whim sort of decision, John. So whatever it is that you can share, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. So I think it was mostly branding and resources. Branding is very important, obviously, in youth soccer because, you know, respectfully, most of the parents either A, as self-admittedly, did not play. Definitely, they all did not play, right? So what I've realized is that even if you do very well in the soccer field, the parents don't really understand what a wall pass is or like transition, right? But they do understand branding, right? And they do understand social media and they understand these things. So it's got to be a complete package. So I think Surf offered that. But what Surf did was they offer inside that housing of branding. And the reason why they are such a good brand is what they offer the players. So for example, the Surf Select team. So what they do is they have, I think there's like 70 Surf academies throughout the country. They offer like regional ID centers for their players. And then if they do well in the regional ID center, it's basically like a Surf national team and a Surf regional team. And then from there, the best Surf players from the 70 academies go and they make this team. And then they, you know, they go to a tournament or a showcase or whatever. So it's really good for those boys. So like this year we had our 2017s, the little guys, they're like 9 years old. Four of them got selected to the top level team. They went to Copa Rayados and then they won Copa Rayados. So it's good for the boys. You know, sometimes at that age, the 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds, it's hard to get a whole group of 12 players to want to go to Texas or Florida. But there's some kids that really want to go. And the other thing is like, hey, plugging them in front of different coaches and different, like in tryout atmospheres with different players, they open their minds a little bit. So I think that it was just beneficial. The kids came back smiling. They enjoyed the experience. So like those little things Surf offers amongst the branding, it's also the resources and the opportunities for the players that they can get more out of us.
Got it. Did you go to them? Did they come to you? When did that first contact happen? And what was the time between first contact and the decision, okay, we're doing this?
So what happened was when I came to East Coast, I came in July 2020. And then in New York already, there was New York Surf, but it was only girls. So what happened was we became close with the guy who brought New York Surf to Long Island, John Feinstein. So he had the New York Surf. And then we had a really good relationship. So we, over 24 months, we just decided to kind of marry those two organizations. So it was East Coast on the boys, Surf on the girls. We were, you know, the identity was exactly what I just told you, where it sounds funny. We're wearing red shirts on the boys' side. We're wearing blue shirts on the girls' side. It's one club. And then we just said, hey, look, the Surf brand is a magnet for, you know, resources and players and things like that. So we just rebranded the whole club, East Coast Surf, and that's where we are today. So it was cool. Like a 24-month process. It happened last year. This is the first year we're wearing Surf uniforms. And it's good.
In the beginning, was there any, like, I'm sure there was, right? But hesitation or things, you know, because it's very difficult to kind of say, okay, we're abandoning what we currently have and we're forming something completely new because it's an unknown, right, John? And then obviously power has to be distributed and shared amongst, you know, the coaches and the directors and who's going to run the show and all that sort of stuff runs through people's minds. And sometimes it's frictionless. I'm going to admit myself, once in a while, it's kind of like a match made in heaven, but that rarely happens. So I'm curious if you had any sort of hesitations and then was it just a matter of a bunch of meetings and a lot of FaceTime with him and eventually you guys get comfortable with each other? Was it one of those things?
No, it was kind of just always friendly. And then everybody kind of reminding each other's business, reminding their own business, excuse me. So like I've never had a phone call about something that happens on the boys' side. I don't think that will ever happen. Like it will just never. And I'll never make a phone call and be like, hey, what's going on the girls' side? So it's like,
got it.
Boys, boys, the girls, then we have the people who do the office stuff in the middle. So we have our field coordinator. We have like, we have a person who does the administrative stuff. We have a person who does like executive decision-making, things like that. So everybody does their job. Nobody crosses lines. It's a lot of respect. It's very, very, very rare. So I've never had an argument with any of them, especially soccer related. It's never happened.
That's awesome. John, anything that we missed about the, you know, the 8-year trajectory of your flagship team?
Yeah,
something important.
Yeah, something important. I think that what maybe listeners would be able to get out of it is the last time I was on the podcast, it was the kids were literally, they were 10 years old. It had to be, I think it was 2019, man. The kids were like 10 years old and it was like, hey, we have a lot of results. This is what we're doing. That's where me and you became, you know, very, very close. And then soon after partners with the courses. And then, but, you know, there was a lot of unknowns, right? I had Brian as like, all right, let me try to get as close to this level as possible. I know what I have here is blossoming. Now we've achieved a national championship. Now we've achieved several regional and like state championships. We even had two of our teams play each other in a state championship one year, like an A and a D team, both got to the final and played each other, which is like, I mean, what else are you going to say, right? And then, you know, obviously we achieved the ECNL, which I know, you know, talking to you, you have your opinion, but they're not just giving that a license away, right? Like you either need to come at them with, I don't know. The only thing I know is results. I don't want to say about anything else because, you know, I don't want to say anything that I have business saying, but I know that we did it through results. So now it's like results happen. You know, we definitely had big achievements. We got the league, you know, we got notoriety, you know, there's a lot of like the club has grown exponentially. But not only that, right? So on our staff, 11 coaches are from our program. So they're 22, 23 years old. They went through their licenses. They're going through the licenses. They were former players. They believe in what we're teaching. They believe in what we're doing, the culture, the soccer, right? So that happened. Now, our other teams behind the 2010, they're showing the same results within reason. Like, so the 2011s, they have their own personality. They're very high energy team. They're a very, very rowdy team, like physically and like vocally, but they play good soccer. They play the same style soccer as the 10s. So the 10s do it, the 11s do it, the 12s went to the national championship as well, playing the same soccer. Our 13s started to pick it up this year. Our 14s were one of the best teams in the tri-state. They kind of disbanded, they regrouped, and now they're in second place in ECNL again. The 15s, they're getting there again. They're playing some good soccer. They're near the top of their brackets. The 16s play soccer. The 17s play soccer. So our teams, you know, it works. If you're consistent with what you're doing and you have a clear, like, principles of play and you have belief in the system and you have coaches who have belief in the system and you stay consistent, it works. My advice would be, like, limit your amount of activities. That's always been our thing. You know, keep your activities to a minimum, 12, 15 activities maximum. Why? Because now the kids don't think, you don't come here with 25 cones, sprinkle them all over the field and be like, or 40 cones. And you'd be like, hey, check out this new activity I did today. Like, our formula has always been, you guys know this activity, but today, instead of focusing on this, we're focusing on that. All right. So, like, basically within the activities the kids know and are familiar with, we change one or two details and we add in fine coaching points to get the most out of the kids. So we teach soccer. We don't teach the drill. And that's been always our bread and butter. And yeah, we just stuck with it and it's working. And we became, like, you know, we became a nice little club with sticking to the plan.
You know, what's interesting is that a lot of clubs say they want to do something like that, or a lot of club directors or organizations or coaches, they say they want to build a uniformity across their teams, right? They have the same philosophy, the same methodology. And most all of them fail because I have found one of two reasons. Either the leader of the club, the one who is responsible for deploying this stuff, isn't strong enough, isn't powerful enough from a whole variety of angles to basically dictate to everybody in the club, all the coaches, you shall play this way, right? You shall do this with your teams. So that's one failure mode. And the other failure mode is potentially, you know, having coaches in the organization who aren't flexible, right? Aren't malleable. So maybe they're already experienced coaches who have been doing their own thing for such a long period of time and they don't want to be told what to do. So imagine yourself, John, going to a new organization, or a new club, and they're telling you, no, you're going to play a 4-4-2, a low block, you know, counter on the wings, and the goalkeeper is never supposed to play out of the back. And you're like, fuck this shit. And you know, like, there's a huge resistance and roadblock there. So a lot of clubs that I've spoken to over the years say that that's one of their issues also. And I've always recommended, I think the best formula is getting young, hungry coaches who only are just starting out or only have 1 year under their belt or 2 years under the belt and are looking for mentorship, are looking to be an apprentice to somebody more experienced. And that could be you, right? And so then you give them the methodology. You teach them, show them the rules, and now you can have uniformity. So my question now, I suppose, after all of that is, I mean, how were you able to deploy this across all the teams and have all the coaches say, okay, John, yes, we'll follow your lead?
Yeah, exactly what you said. So I think 11 of our coaches have played for us or they have been with us from the beginning of their coaching career. Literally 11 of them. Like, this is the only academy that you're a part of, that this is your identity. as far as soccer goes. Anyway, so what we do is we develop our staff, we educate our staff, and our principles of play are the king, right? So it's basically like, if your team has three center backs and you need to get those guys in the field, I have no problem playing a 3-5-2 or a 3-4-3 or whatever, if you want to play like a 4-3-3, but then, you know, you maneuver your team, your six drops in or whatever, you play with the three in the back or whatever you got to do. I have no problem with that. It's just, I wanted to, you know, the kids, the main principles of play, they have to hit these points and be as flexible and as fluid as possible. I really moved away from like everything must be a system. That's no good for the kids, because then when they get to college, they don't even, or pro or whatever, they don't know how to play it into the system.
Yep.
So it's, I like fluidity personally.
Yeah, it's the principles that matter, right? Because if you actually hit the fundamental principles, the players can adapt to almost anything.
Yep.
Great. Unless I've missed something, I now kind of was going to transition into the players are soon going to graduate and move on to soccer that is adult soccer.
Yeah.
And one of those paths is college. And obviously, I know you've been working on a project with respect to college. I'm going to chime in and give you some of my experiences here and there as well, because we've had a lot of players that made that transition. But maybe you can inform the folks out there what you've been working on with respect to facilitating that transition and why you even chose to work on that in the first place.
All right, cool. So now as these kids get to 10th grade, it happened about 18 months ago. I started studying the college game and how the process worked and what platforms were out there. So what happened was, as I studied these platforms, I'm like, which one am I going to use? You know, which one is the club going to use? I realized there are certain pain points, and I saw, like, talk about money grabs. Like, first of all, they're not even soccer specific, a lot of these platforms.
Platforms for what?
Providing a connection between players and colleges, right? So whether it's researching schools, connecting to schools, you know, creating a player profile, things like that, all that, you know, that platform that kids use to get to college, I saw through it. I just knew, I'm like, these guys are not soccer people who developed this. They're probably, you know, smart guys or people who know, you know, that there's a void that needs to be filled and you can make a lot of money. And what I realized was like, okay, these kids are creating a profile with their academics. And then what happens after that point is like, okay, go find the schools that's good fit for you. And you could contact all the coaches through our platform. Okay. So you have kids in the ECNL who coming off the bench and they don't know what direction to look for. They don't understand, like in our neighborhood, how hard it is to play for St. John's or Fordham, you know, and or let alone like Wake Forest or Stanford, like forget about it. You know, it's another planet, but these kids are not, if your club does a good job informing and educating the players and the parents, fine. But there is nothing in the platform that teaches these kids what schools they should be targeting. And a person can only go that far, like a counselor or like a coordinator, a college coordinator, right? So Gary, if you come to me and you're like, hey, you know, coach, or the coordinator of the club, you know, what schools are good for me. And I say, okay, what do you want to study? And then I understand what level you play at. And I name some schools, right? Okay, but what about the schools I didn't think of as a human? Like, it's just so limited and you're relying on somebody to tell you, which is so error prone. What I did was I just created an algorithm, which kind of, it's easy to understand the weight of a player. Right? Meaning like if you're in the middle of an MLS team or you're the bottom of an ECNL team or you're the top of like an RL team, I could understand where that player is and what colleges you probably should be looking at. And what I did was, as you go through any college process, academically, they label schools as reach schools, which are just out of your, you know, reach. If your baseline is a school that is like academically like an 89 average and you're trying to get into a school that's like a 94 average, you'd consider that a reach. But if you are, I should use GPA, but And if you're, you know, a target school would be something where if you have like a 3.5 GPA and a school is like a 3.4 or 3.6, that's a target, where like a 3.9 would be a reach. And then obviously there's the long shot schools, which is like if I have a 3.3 GPA and I'm trying to get into the Ivy League, that's a long shot. That's probably not going to happen. No one's going to say you're not getting in, but it's a long shot. So what I did was I took that terminology that's familiar with academics and schools. Every you know, DOE in the country will use that terminology. I used it for soccer. So you put in what level of play you are. Right? I'm an ECNL player. I'm in the middle of the pack, or I'm on the bottom of the pack, or I'm an MLS player and I'm a standout. It will say to you, you are a reach for, or other way around, Wake Forest might be a reach for you, or Wake Forest is a long shot for you, or Binghamton is a target for you, or Binghamton is a long shot for you. So it will tell the player in plain English what the parents understand. So it tells you exactly what the guidance counselor schools tell you for academic. It clones the answers and it makes it very understandable and relatable, so the kids know what direction that they're looking at, right? So if I say I'm an ECNL player, I'm at the bottom of my roster, I come off the bench, okay, these are the schools that are probably a good fit for you. And then from there, it gives you suggestions into what schools you're not looking at but would be a great fit. It's not just the ones that are in my region or whatever. So it does that. Also, it's interactive. So as you go through the college process, it walks you through every step of the way with checklists that you click on. Yes, I accomplished this. Yes, I did this. Yes, I did this task. Yes, I did this task. And it takes you through the whole process and it tells you how prepared you are along that journey. So those two standout features we've had like really, really good reviews on. Everybody using it, like, kind of cites those as like game changers along their process. Obviously, we just released this in March. So, you know, the feedback we're getting is live. And we really like the tool, and, you know, it's doing really well. We have a couple of ECNL clubs signed up. We're in talks with one MLS club signed up, and one of the local Elite Academy League clubs just signed up as well this week.
Got it. And once a player constructs this profile and sees the matches for potential universities, what do they do? In simple terms, do they effectively like hit a button, click, and then their profiles go out to these schools that were a match to them? Is that effectively what happens?
Yeah, so it's two-way now. So what happens is you can email the coaches. It gives you the whole staff. Yeah. You know, like whatever staff is listed on the school website, you can reach out to. And then also, like, you could, like, coaches could create a team brochure. It populates with all their players on there. When you give the brochure out, schools can like just scan it and then contact the kids directly from the other direction. So yeah, pretty much the standard as far as communication, status quo. I haven't thought of any better than the status quo, but effectively exactly what you said. You could click a button, get in touch with coaches. It's called Recruit 90. I don't know if I even said that yet, which, I know my marketing isn't the best, I guess, but
no, we'll put the link obviously in the show notes, or we'll put flash it up here on the video as well. No, this is really good, dude, because look, when Brian and me by his side effectively were graduating our first crops of players that were aging out, all this technology wasn't necessarily there. And if it was there, it was extremely clunky. And furthermore, you know, we had the fortune of having teams that were operating at the highest level with the, you know, at the highest platforms. And I know that that's not applicable to everybody across the country, right? Which is the people who need help, right? For instance, if you're in an MLS franchise, you know, an academy, and you're, you know, doing all these things, the colleges know who you are and the colleges come to you, right? Instead of you going to the colleges. But that's not necessarily who this is for. This is for the ones who are a little bit, I don't want to say under the radar, but not quite there, where Stanford's blowing up your phone and you're kind of saying, okay, well, what are you going to offer me, Stanford? Because I have Wake Forest over here. You know what I mean? Like, so that's why I think this is an extraordinary tool for folks out there because they need help for sure.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely for helping players understand where to look, helping fans understand where to look instead of doing the guesswork in a very critical and short window.
Totally.
Hey, if you get the call from the school that you didn't expect, even better, but at least you're not going to be wasting your time sending emails and getting no responses, right? Because it's going to be saying, hey, look, this is a reach school. Check out these target schools that are for you. And while you're at it, check out these safety schools, the safety schools.
And obviously it's not just Division One; it's the whole thing, right? Division Two, NAIA, all that. Got it.
Yep. It has like over 1,600 programs. Boys and girls, or men's and women's. Yeah.
Brilliant, dude.
Yeah, it's cool. I'm very excited. College is tough, man, to play there. It's getting
well,
hard.
Especially nowadays, there's a lot of discussion and quote-unquote controversy over the colleges looking for foreigners to fill up their rosters, you know, versus the domestic player. And look, I understand both sides of the issue. You know, on one side of the issue, the college coaches who I've spoken to, they're like, well, yeah, Gary, you know, some of these foreigners are just better players, you know, and they're more disciplined and they listen more and they have a proper mentality. And, you know, some of our domestic kids, unfortunately, aren't quite there yet, you know. And so the reality is that the domestic player, the American player, has competition on their hands. They just do. And there's nothing you can do about that. You just have to accept that reality as it exists. And work with the tools that you have at your disposal.
Absolutely. The real world.
The real world. The real world, man.
Yeah, man. I've had this conversation with people very recently, and I'm like, look, these kids got to learn that the real world is a little different from what, if anybody that's listening to this that were in the room when I said this, it was like you could hear a pin drop, but it's accurate, man. Let me ask you something, Gary. When's the last time someone came up to you and said, I love you, man. You're doing great work. Like when? You know, the real world, man, it doesn't work like that. Mom and dad do that. And once you're out of the house, 18, 20 years old, whatever, 18 years old, now what? The real world is complaints, pressure, instruction, right? Real feedback. You know, I want my job done like this. I want my house built like this. You know, the floor is uneven, blah, 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 blah. You know, whatever the complaint that they can give you. And yeah, that's the real world, man. So the kids don't hear that. And I think it's too late when it hit them in the face with they try to go to college. Like, oh, wait, I can't play at St. John's.
Yeah. It depends on the culture too, because I don't know, when you were saying that, it just came to my mind. You can laugh if you want. I came across this Instagram reel where it's an Asian mom. And she's like, I don't know why they're calling me a tiger mom, you know? I give my kids, you know, plenty of leeway. I let them do whatever they want. For instance, if they want to be a heart surgeon, that's fine. They want to be an oncologist, no problem. A dermatologist, I'm cool with that. And so she lists all these specialties of medicine, right? And so and she's like, tiger mom, my butt. See, I let them do whatever they want, you know? So it's like the different cultures have different preparations. And some people might take issue with what I'm going to say, and that's fine. Of their children, they have different philosophies associated with it. Yeah, like you mentioned me, you know, when was the last time I heard, oh, great job or whatever, and you said, oh, maybe your parents. No, my parents are Argentinian, dude, and they like good job, my huevos. You know, it's like almost just like the Asians in many respects. I'm generalizing here. Nothing's ever good enough. And so, lo and behold, does that cause trauma? Maybe there's some trauma, but there's also a lot of benefit to that as well. I have maybe an eternal chip on my shoulder as a consequence of these things. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist at all. But there definitely are benefits. How many times have you heard, John, that these people who are ultra successful in life, and I know it's a trade-off, they always confess or they admit, yeah, they had hardships growing up. Like they need some demons inside to propel them to try to, I don't know, become special or do something special. And they have a resilience associated with them to endure pain too, the pain of life, and they push through the pain. And unfortunately, here in the States, a certain demographic, shall I say, the suburban club soccer demographic, kind of wants to shelter the kids a little too much, in my opinion, which is where people like you, people like Brian, people, coaches have a huge role to play, in my opinion, to try to give them a little bit of that, hey, this is the real world, you know, give them a little bit of challenges. Don't shelter them that much.
Yeah, man. I think parents are trying to do the right thing. I think that
for sure. Yep.
They're supporting their kids. They love their kids. I think that they're trying to, especially in a lot of the neighborhoods that, Long Island, a lot of the parents, they do very well for themselves. And I think that they busted their asses to get to where they have to be. And I think that sometimes it's kind of like, I want to give my kid everything I didn't have.
Of course, every parent.
Yeah, I think that sometimes that could be the poison, poisoning them unintentionally because, you're softening them. Look, I don't know if this is like toxic masculinity or whatever, right? But yeah, I know. But listen, man, I don't think. I'll just speak for myself, and I coach boys, so it is what it is. I don't think that there's any room for people to wait for a compliment and all that. We got to shoulder our emotions. We got to take the brunt of it for family. Right. And there's no room for, I don't even want to hear a good job. I just need to provide and do my best and bust my ass for my family, I think. And, I think you got to have thick skin. And I think that I would like to teach that because I think that's missing from society. So if you come through my program and I work with you directly or indirectly, meaning you're one of the players in my 20-man roster, or you're one of the players that I work with as a program director, which I try to get involved with as many kids as I can, as often as I can. I'm trying to leave them with like, that guy, he kicked my ass, but I know that he's got a lot of love for me, and if I can hit every kid with that, where it's like bah, 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 like I'm after him, but then when they do it, they execute, I'm like, that's what I'm looking for. And you see them like light up and you're like, yeah man, like that kid pushed through. And I know, that's what I'm looking for at the end of the day, man, to build these kids.
And you do it with love. You don't do it to be a dick, and you don't do it because you have an ego issue or you have a power issue. This is just the way it is. It's no hatred. It's no ego. It's nothing. It's just with love, you're teaching these sorts of lessons or trying to, or establishing a culture that nurtures these sorts of things.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's like a generator. Like that's where it's all coming from. Everything I do is coming from there. Like that's the main thing, that's the source. The source is like, try to churn out as much like monsters as I can mentally. Like we had just finished tryouts and I told the parents, I'm like, look, there's four parts of soccer, right? Technical, tactical, physical, mental, right? When these kids are, whatever they stop playing, whether it's 18, 30, 40 years old, whenever they stop, when that ball goes in the closet, right? The tactical means nothing. It doesn't matter if they know how to overlap or transition. It doesn't matter how many times they can like beat a player with the left foot and then the right foot and how many scissors they can do. The fitness, I mean, I don't think anyone attributes fitness at 45 to their U16 soccer coach. The only thing that we could teach these kids is the mentality. Like that's everything. They could take that into starting a business, whatever, any trade they do, any profession that they go into. If you teach them to be like, to persevere, to be committed, to just eat the competition alive, like that is going to, they're going to go very far. And you know what? The kids coming out now, if they have that trait, they're going to run people over because society is getting softer and softer and softer. If a kid just locks in and is like, I'm going to run over anybody who's in my way, I'm going to give 100% every day, I'm never going to take a break, those kids are going to be very successful just through that. Because I'm looking around, if you're like 8 years old and you stay on that road for 10 years and you do whatever you want to do, when our generation phases out and the next one comes in, you're going to be able to do whatever you want.
Yeah. And we were talking about the transition to college, guys, because parents are going to be listening to this. When the kid goes to college, you don't know. You don't know if the kid's going to be riding the bench, and the kid's going to have to overcome that instead of folding if he wants to continue playing.
Let me ask you one thing, just exactly what you just said. So you're familiar with the transfer portal, obviously.
Yeah.
So like, what do you think about that? How that's like the hottest thing now in college? Like the kids do a 1 year in D1. They don't like that they're getting redshirted or they're on the bench, even though that was the expectation. And where do they go? Right to the internet, transfer portal. College coaches aren't even looking at teams anymore because, high school teams, or meaning high school age kids, because they just hit the transfer portal, be like, hey, this kid's seasoned and proven. I don't even need to, boom. What do you think about that?
It's hard for me to give a good opinion because I haven't dug into it and lived it and really thought about it for an extended period of time, right? Because there's all kinds of second, third, fourth, fifth order effects. My superficial instinct goes against everything we just finished ranting about, where it's kind of creating softness. Oh, I don't like this, I'm out, and immediately bail. I don't know what kind of a situation that, or lessons that's being absorbed by the young men or women when they go out into the workforce, assuming we have a workforce that resembles anything like today, that they're going to be doing the same sort of thing. They work at a job for 3 months, I'm out. And then they go to the next one, 6 months later, I'm out. And the next one, a year later, I'm out. It's not going to be like my parents' generation where they started working somewhere and they retired at the same place. Obviously, yeah. We all know this, okay? But on the other extreme is wild to me, where there is no, I don't know, I don't, I'm looking for the right word. There seems to be no resilience or fortitude or stability if you're just hopping around and you're constantly looking for greener pastures. Maybe that's the way to do it, John. I just don't see how that's the right path to take.
Yeah, I think that if you're going to build, if college soccer is going to do what they want, they're saying they want to do by going to like a full calendar and all that stuff, and players are just going around and around and around, there's going to be no soccer, right? Because it's kind of like, how am I going to get players that fit my system?
Yeah. There's no continuity, and if I want to give the opposite end of my superficial opinion, it's like, oh, well, Gary, maybe you're all for this portal thing because it's a free market. Like, you shouldn't be locked in, for 2 years or 4 years somewhere. Like, fuck that. Why do you get to own me and I'm stuck with you, for 3 years or 4 years? I am a huge advocate of open markets, as you well know. We need an open market in the pro game. We need an open market in the youth game. And this is kind of an open market in the college game. I just haven't lived it, John, to give an informed opinion, deep, deep opinion as to what all the consequences happen to be.
Yeah, it's like a transfer window in pro soccer, right? So
yeah. But in pro soccer, you're like under contract, for 3 years or 4 years. Like if somebody wants to acquire you, they have, there has to be an agreement between all parties.
Right.
But it sounds like the kids can just put their name in the transfer portal, and if somebody wants them, off they go. There's no red tape.
Yeah, I'm not sure about how much red tape there is. I'm not in the college game, right? So mm-hmm. I don't know about any. I wouldn't want to speak about the rules. I'm sure that there's someone that is in the college game that would love to jump on this podcast and really dig into those intricacies. But I was just picking your brain.
At the same time, if I'm putting on another hat here, it's kind of like, well, what is university for, really? It's exactly. For academics, right? It's for you to go there and get a degree. It's not there for you to play soccer. Soccer is an ancillary, sort of a secondary thing, or at most a parallel thing. So what are we doing from an academic perspective if the kid's just going to hop around three universities in 4 years? That it's very weird.
It's exactly. We're changing majors.
It's so weird, man.
Nothing wrong with changing majors, but if it's because the coach didn't play you, it is, you're right. It's a student athlete, right?
I mean, let's be real. That's actually probably the number one reason for hopping around, is you're not being played.
100%. Why else would you? There's no monetary gain, right?
No, I mean, unless you're maybe in a football program, and something. And then you have name, image, and likeness sort of things going on where you actually are getting economic windfalls. But soccer, come on, soccer, please. Yeah.
I'm playing. Well, when I heard it with the, you know, with the national team not too long ago, with parents getting involved in our national team, that's when I've, you know what I'm talking about.
No, I don't. What do you mean?
Oh, with the arena thing or whatever.
Oh, with parents getting involved?
Yeah. Once I heard that stuff, I was just like, oh, this shit's never going to stop.
It never stops, bro. Right now, they're talking about, oh, Mauricio Pochettino, you know, when he announced the roster, he didn't give the guys who didn't make the cut phone calls, you know, to explain himself and you know, give solace or consolation to the, what the fuck? And do you see, and I don't know if you saw his press conference the other night or whatever. He's like, that's fucking bullshit. He literally said bullshit, because it is bullshit, ladies and gentlemen. Like, sending an email is more than enough. You didn't make the team. Sorry. Let's move on. These are grown-ass men who are professional athletes, and we have a fan base here and even media. Oh, it's so wrong. It's so unprofessional. He should be calling these guys, you know, and talking to them. John, the shit we experience in youth, they're experiencing at the freaking national team level.
That's right. Well, like, it's not a club. It's just your national team. Like, you know, it's a privilege to play for the national team. There's no, they don't owe you anything. You know, that's what the other guy with Pulisic, with like choosing when he wants to play for the country and all that. Like, for me, you know, if I was a coach of a national team and someone was deciding when they want to play with me or not, or for this country or not, you never play here again.
Yeah.
Ever.
The whole thing's a circus, dude. I understand that we're the host country, and so they did this whole marketing thing with a stage, you know, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know what Brazil did? Ancelotti just sat in a regular old press conference the day of. No player had any foresight into what's going on, and he had a piece of paper and he just read out the names.
Yeah.
The end.
What do you think about, let me ask you something, because you talked about the marketing of the World Cup. How is it in California? I haven't seen, the only, you know, I've seen on Ritz crackers, I've seen the U.S. The U.S. soccer logo, and I saw Pulisic on like Cheez-Its. Snack aisle. I haven't seen anything else. Have you?
I have not seen anything. My perspective is the people in charge of soccer here have ruined it. They've ruined the game. Specifically, if I'm being totally honest, it's MLS, because they control everything. They control the federation, they control it all. And what they have managed to do over the course of the past 5-10 years, if I'm talking most recently, they've managed to alienate a huge percentage of soccer people in this country. So it's completely polarized. There are people who are pro MLS and like kind of like pro US soccer. And then there's a whole huge other percentage that's anti MLS and anti US soccer. So with that sort of division, that sort of polarization, everything is toxic now. And yeah. So they're in a pickle here, if they actually cared. I'm presuming they even care.
Yeah. Well, it's very,
it's sad.
Behind, it's very hard to get behind, like, you know, I'm in the game, like, it's just so hard to get behind. I don't even know, they're switching it now to the FIFA calendar. I don't think that's a good idea, because when I watch the MLS, it's 9 o'clock and a summer night, and it's a Wednesday, and I eat barbecue, I come inside, I'm like, oh, look at this LA Galaxy, you know, Chicago Fire, like, I'm gonna watch this. I'm not watching in the summer on a Wednesday. I'm not watching that. I'm not watching that over the Premier League. I'm not watching La Liga. I'm not watching that over any of the leagues. You know, when I do have the time in the summer, I have time to watch it. But that's me, you know. It's going to be very.
But it's curious, because people need to hear this. We're soccer people, John. We literally work in the space, and we could give two shits, not just about MLS, right? The domestic league here, but we actually don't even, I'll speak for myself. I actually could give a fuck about the national team. That's crazy.
I'm a soccer first culture heritage. I work in the space. I kicked the ball my entire life. Everything has surrounded this game to a certain extent, and I could give two shits. That means something's broken, and it's not me that's broken, because like me, there's millions in this country who are soccer people who could give two fucks.
Yeah.
Anyway, hey, good chat.
That got you going, man. That got you going.
I have to have at least one of these rants per episode, man.
There it is. I was like, there it is.
Cool. Okay. Did we forget anything? Any parting remarks? Where can people find you? I know you said recruit90.com is the college soccer application portal for players to build their profiles and get that process rolling. But any other place to send people to?
Twitter, JKokoros8. That's always been my Twitter. If you go on there. I haven't been so live on it lately. I've been very busy, so social media hasn't been the focus. Johan Junior Soccer on the Instagram and East Coast Surf on the Instagram. You can find us there. Or you can just reach out to me anytime. You know, if you get my email from any of those channels, love to interact with everybody. You know, if you reached out to me before, I'd love to hear about you and what you've been up to. Other than that, man, you know, say what's up on the field. That's the best way. I love talking to people on the field between games or whatever. It's always good to chop it up.
Brilliant. And last thing I'll remark is you'll be here in Southern California and San Diego at the end of June and the first week of July for a tournament. People can hit you up there too.
Hell yeah. ECNL playoffs, God willing, June 25th to July 2nd. That's right. We'll be over there, hopefully with a couple teams, not just one. So that'll be great. I'll see you guys out there. I know there'll be definitely some listeners that are coaching out there. So love to catch up with everybody. We have a lot of downtime. See what's up.
Brilliant, John. Thank you.
For sure. Thank you, Gary. You're the man.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches. You can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.